All right. Welcome. Can you both hear us?
I can, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. Our next case we will be handling via WebEx, and it is Calleo versus Arga Transport, Inc.
I'm sorry. That was garbled. I couldn't understand what you said.
Well, that was the Appellee's argument from the prior case, so I'm not quite sure why it's replaying for you. But if we're ready to begin, Mr. Harris?
Thank you, Your Honors. The misclassification of workers has risen to an epidemic proportion in the United States, according to the Department of Labor and the Nebraska Law Review. And when employers misclassify their workers, they avoid protections afforded under federal and state laws, including workers' compensation benefits. The enormity has been shown to be in excess of $54 billion a year as of 2015. So we're dealing with an enormous national problem here. And the question presented to this court is whether it should allow a scheme that allows motor carriers to avoid mandatory state law, federal regulations, and establish public safety policies that protect everyone on the highways from fatalities and injuries. In this case, we have a particular application of the uniformly recognized 10-factor test between employers and employees and independent contractors in a motor carrier situation with a sole independent driver. So the first question that we need to focus on is the extent of control. And by the way, I didn't reserve my 3 minutes, so if I may do that, I'll interpose that now. So the extent of control in this case, we have ARGA, which is the registered owner of the truck, although the court got that wrong and said it was owned by the leasing company. But there's an admission and there's evidence cited in the record showing the registration to ARGA. Importantly, Oscar didn't own a truck. Oscar didn't lease a truck. Oscar owned a truck 10 years ago, which was something the court somehow relied upon, but the focus in a workers' compensation case is the employment status at the time of the accident. And in this case, we have continuous employment for 6 months with ARGA documented by the records. So, and an employment application with ARGA, which the court ignores and labels as self-serving. There is no other employment contract by admission, and defendants try to interpose a owner-operator contract that they admit was never signed or they couldn't find a signed one, and they tried to interject it by witnesses who they named in the pretrial order but didn't call, by an affidavit which was objected to in my pretrial responses as dictated by the court. And the court blamed me for not taking their deposition when the burden of proof is upon the defendant to present their own evidence. There was no reason for me to depose.
Mr. Harris?
Yes, ma'am.
Didn't the court, though, ultimately disregard those affidavits? Didn't they find them underwhelming?
Well, the court, on one hand, said that they found that the testimony wasn't credible and said he disregarded it. But then he embraced every aspect of it, like the company and its customers' relationships, which is nowhere to be found in the record. Maybe it's in those affidavits. But the fact that he would have signed it or should have signed it, all aspects of that, you know, someone's going to say that, well, it's harmless error because he says I disregard it. But his entire opinion embraces aspects of those affidavits and the facts that are unsupported by law. And it just doesn't make sense, Your Honor. The most important and obvious point is that owner-operator agreement, the quid pro quo for it, the consideration has got to be that he, Oscar, owns a truck and leases it to the company. There is no, Oscar didn't own a truck and he didn't lease it. So even if that contract would have existed, it would have failed because it had no consideration. And it just doesn't make sense. But the court held that all that against us and said all of Oscar's testimony was self-serving. But Oscar's testimony was objective. You know, he said they were ARGA customers. ARGA controlled the delivery date and the time. ARGA charged, did the billing and the marketing, the customer relations. ARGA charged its customers. He had no idea, Oscar had no idea what the charges were. And yet they treated him as if all these business decisions were his to make, and nothing could be further from reality. So it wasn't harmless error, Your Honor. And it was a violation of due process. And we can't allow this to occur again. He said, and the defense argued that I should have objected to their, to the witnesses. There's no procedure to object to witnesses. Matter of fact, I relished them calling him, and I could have cross-examined him. But to say, you know, if I hadn't objected vociferously in writing in the pretrial order to the affidavits, that's one thing, but there's no procedure to object to the witnesses. This is beyond the pale. It's of constitutional due process proportions. You know, plaintiffs and defendants can come into court with written affidavits from anybody saying anything from now on if we allow this rule to propagate, and if we do it on the day of trial. So I want to get to a couple other things before my rebuttal time. I eat into that, but the judge was talking about the locality rule, and we have to talk about the locality. In this case, is the interstate commerce. The train can't leave the station without the regulations, and in this case, the truck can't leave the garage without DOT operating authority. And that operating authority embraces the hiring, supervision, training, and dispatching of drivers, which is mandatory by the motor carrier, not by the driver. And this court's decision in this regard is enormously and grossly in error in that regard. So, and we've got several Nebraska Supreme Court cases, not in the work comp arena, that have adopted these federal and state regulations. So looks like I'm eating into my rebuttal time. So if I may, I'll reserve the balance.
Thank you. Ms. Mills?
Yes, thank you. I'm here today on behalf of ARGA. We believe the trial court was correct in their findings in regards to the independent contractor and employee relationship that was argued before the court. And evidence, Exhibit 14 was the plaintiff's deposition, and it is cited throughout the order from the Workers' Compensation Court. And the plaintiff was clear in his deposition about his understanding of the trucking industry and the various roles that he played within the trucking industry. He admitted that he enjoyed having the opportunity to come and go between different companies as he pleased, that he sold his truck 10 years ago because he could make more money offering his services to various companies versus owning his own truck and being responsible for the maintenance and the cost. He understood that he would only be paid for the work that he provided a company when he worked for various companies. He testified that he would use the trucks of any company that was willing to provide him with work, that he could offer his services. So he was used to using other companies' trucks. He would come and go from defendant ARGA. and even following this accident, continued to come and go from various companies offering his services as a truck driver hauling goods. He admitted that he would, you know, receive the order for a load, he would pick up the load, he would deliver it on time, and then he would turn in a bill of lading to be paid according to the job that he performed.
Mills, but Arga was the one that directed when he picked up and the deadline for delivering, isn't that correct?
Yes, they did pick up the delivery deadline. The court evaluated this and their decision and found that while the defendants did say when you needed to pick up and when you needed to drop off, there was no requirement for the means that you transported the goods, the method you transported the goods, the route you took, that limited both time to pick up and when it needed to be delivered was not enough to exercise the control under the test before the court.
The determination of whether this person's an independent contractor or an employee, that's a question of fact, is it not?
It is, Your Honor. Yes.
So what's our standard of review here if there's issues on both sides that were presented?
Then it would be both in law and in fact, if both are at issue?
Yes.
Your standard of review is going to be, sorry, Your Honor. I'm just looking down at my notes. Reasonable. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm looking at my notes here real quickly. The standard of review. Believed I had it in my notes. A question of law, sufficiency of the evidence.
Thanks.
So in just furtherance of the briefs before this court, again, looking at the plaintiff's own testimony and explaining his understanding of the relationship, you know, he was very clear in his testimony that he enjoyed the aspect of being able to come and go from companies that he saw fit. And when he wanted to, and he appreciated the opportunity to go back and forth from even defendant in this case, the defendant Arga in this case. In terms of any arguments regarding the evidence in this case, I think it's been fully outlined in the parties' briefs before this court. I don't think the evidence that was at issue was even given any weight by the court. And in this same argument, there is a discrepancy here, I think, before the court as to plaintiff's own testimony and his deposition, his sworn deposition testimony, and an affidavit that he filed and served separately. So I think the court did look at both of those in detail when coming to determination on the issues.
Ms. Mills, to the extent that the driver was operating a vehicle that was leased by Arga, is that correct? Arga leased that vehicle from someone else. And didn't that lease agreement provide that Arga would have the exclusive control, use, and possession, I think is the terminology in there. What role, if any, does that play in determining whether he's an independent contractor or an employee?
I think this goes to the ruling in Stevens that some of that control over the motor carrier is based on the regulations and laws that are imposed on motor carriers. And so while there are methods and means and control of the actual vehicle, it is in line with those laws that are in place to protect the transporting of goods, and that demanding that compliance with the motor vehicle regulations and laws does not amount to exercising control over the driver that utilizes the vehicle.
Thank you.
I And so again, we think just from defendant's perspective, we just reiterate that the court was correct in their analysis and applying the 10-factor test to this case and finding that plaintiff was not an employee for defendant Arga.
Okay, thank you. How much time does Mr. Harris have remaining?
29 seconds.
Mr. Harris, can you see the clock, Mr. Harris?
I can.
Okay.
It says 2 minutes and 29 seconds, Your Honor. So I have to make good use of this. Let me pick up where you left off. This contract required exclusive possession and control of the truck and its operations that's imposed upon Arga contractually, which is the same exclusive control requirement under Nebraska statutes and under the federal regulations and under public policy and under case law adopted recently and continuously for decades in the state of Nebraska. Exclusive possession and control leaves no room for Oscar to be in control, which is the test that applies here, and there's no evidence to the contrary. And as I argued in my reply brief under the recent Hopman O'Brien case, that issue is preempted by federal law. There's no room. This isn't a factual issue. That issue of control is mandatory public policy in, embedded in our regulations and state laws and public policy. So,
but Mr. Harris, isn't the question of whether he was an employee or an independent contractor, that is a question of fact, is it not?
Exactly, Your Honor. That is absolutely true. And then the 10-factor test, the first one of control, is an issue of law. I mean, there's no way around it. But Nebraska, in the Hammerling versus Happy Cab, said the ownership and right to control the taxi cab is necessary to establish the employment relationship. And all the other cases, and we're going to start with the Stevens case that she just cited, the Stevens versus Celeryvale. In that case, Stevens was the owner of the truck that he leased to the company, made his living, had his own business, and that case was properly decided. We don't have any dispute with that. And the other cases, the Eden versus Spalding and Anthony versus Prefab, that the court relies upon, both of them, there's distinct ownership of a business and ownership of trucks, one or more trucks that are leased to the company. And those cases are rightly decided. Those people are independent contractors. But when the company owns the truck, Nebraska law recognizes it is overwhelming evidence of employer-employee status and control. So that leaves me with 0.1 seconds. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harris, Ms. Mills. The case is submitted and counsel is excused.
Thank you.
Thank you.